In episode 23, we will discuss all things urban, from the operational environment to some historical and contemporary urban examples that show urban warfare is not going away anytime soon.
The biggest thing I've learned from traveling to, just in the last few years, Nagorno-Karabakh, Ukraine multiple times, Israel multiple times, is that your decisive battle will be the urban fight.
Hello, welcome to The Operational Arch, bridging the gap between strategy and tactics, and the official podcast of the School of Advanced Military Studies at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. I'm Major Jesse Vias, alongside Lieutenant Colonel J.D. Corliss. Our guest today is John Spencer, who currently serves as the Chair of Urban Warfare Studies at Modern Warfare Institute, co-director of the Urban Warfare Project, and host of the Urban Warfare Project podcast at West Point. On top of his West Point duties, John is a colonel in the California State Guard with assignment to the 40th Infantry Division, California Army National Guard, as the Director of Urban Warfare Training. John served over 25 years in the Army as an infantry soldier, having held the ranks from sergeant to sergeant first class to major. His assignments include two combat deployments to Iraq as both an infantry platoon leader and company commander, ranger instructor, Joint Chief of Staff and Army Staff Intern, fellow with the Chief of Staff of the Army Strategic Studies Group. He is an internationally recognized subject matter expert in urban warfare that regularly advises FORSCOM, TRADOC, DARPA, and the UN, along with many other military and national security organizations. He holds a Master of Policy Management degree from Georgetown University and has published numerous professional articles, books, chapters, and on urban warfare. Understanding Warfare and Connected Soldiers' Life, Leadership, Social Connections, and Modern Warfare. Sir, it's a pleasure to have you here today. We're excited to talk to you about urban warfare and what commanders and staff can start thinking about now to plan to prepare for the next urban operation. You're hands down one of the world's leading experts in urban warfare. I think your bio alone says it all. Before we dive into urban operations, can you briefly explain what urban warfare is and why it's important?
Sure. I mean, why? I'll start with the second part. Why is it important? Is because unique to the application of force to achieve political goals, the U.S. military is an all-environment military. It needs to be prepared to fight and win no matter where the nation sends it to achieve national interests. And that, and by history, by all measures of what type of warfare will we face to achieve the nation's goals, it will be urban. I can give you urban demographics of how the world is becoming more urbanized. I can give you historical, modern history, military objectives where the urban is the center of gravity. It is the objective. It is the decisive battle. So that's pretty easy on why it's important. The definition is also pretty easy. Urban, as defined by U.S. military doctrine, means that you have a complex man-made terrain. So think the three-dimensional space of an urban area, buildings, and we can go through that. So you have a three-dimensional man-made terrain. You have a population that lives on that terrain, and then you have the infrastructure to support it. Warfare, and I don't have to talk to a SAMS group to know the difference between war and warfare, but warfare is more so the application of force, the fighting, you know, the technologies, the tactics, the methods. So combine the two words, and I'm a pretty simple guy as an old infantryman. Urban, as our definition, the triad, the man-made terrain, population, infrastructure, warfare. So urban warfare is warfare that happens in urban areas. Some people make it more complex than that, but it's pretty simple.
Yes, sir. And you mentioned the urban triad. NATO specifically actually talks about the urban quad that includes the information domain.
Yeah.
And although the Army doctrine does include information within the triad, can you expand a little bit about how that's included, especially now in a new evolution of urban warfare with information domain?
Sure. I mean, I think, I didn't mention the quad because I don't think it's universally accepted as the new definition of urban, although I agree. And in our course at the 40th Infantry Division, the only one in the world, the Urban Operations Planners course, which is the only one in the world designed to teach division staffs, commanders, key leaders, and also brigade level urban operations, mainly focused on offense and defense, we use the urban quad as a definition, which adds in that information domain that's unique to all environments, although urban operations, for some reason, which is frustrating, is considered a special environment. But within all environments, the information operations domain, whatever word you want to use, is a part. But unique to the urban operations is the complexity, the significance, the ubiquitousness, and for political aspects, the impact of the information domain in urban operations. One, because there are more sensors in that environment than any other on the planet, right? Jungle warfare is really hard. Arctic warfare is really hard. But you don't have that ubiquitous access to information. Every camera, every cell phone, everything is a sensor, and you're basically fighting war in a fishbowl, which is unique to that environment. So, but also the ramifications and the application that we're seeing in wars, I know we're going to talk about it, that are going on right now, is how much that information operation, since war is a contest of will, which I'm a strong believer in Clausewitzian theories, war is an application of will, and that includes all elements of the Clausewitzian trinity, if you want to use that definition. And in the urban operations, the information domain has the ability to influence the will of all parties, the military, the population, and the political apparatus, than any other environment on the planet.
So that's kind of a good segue. Talk about the quad and just kind of the complexity of urban warfare. So if I'm a captain or a major, or even just a kind of, as we are here at SAMS, a future planner, and CG comes to me and says, hey, this is going to be an intermediate objective, or it's the final objective for a campaign we're coming up. What is like the first thing that I need to start thinking about? What is like the first quality, first elements, first objectives that I need to kind of internalize as a planner that has to think about taking an organization, a unit, into an urban environment?
Yeah, so I mean, we developed a course because of this, although it's not oriented down to that company level. But number one is to understand what the task is, right? So task and purpose, like what is the task? And because along the spectrum of urban operations, people often either carry forward the application of the requirements to achieve the task from a different era. So urban operations such as counterinsurgency, counterterrorism, stability operation, DISCA, all of that, each one a very complex. And by complex, I do mean the true definition of complexity, not just complicated, that if you enter the environment, it changes, and you don't know the second and third order effects of the changes. But if you're at that lower level, number one is, like Clausewitz says, which actually applies to the strategic level, is recognize the type of war you're in. Don't try to make it foreign to its nature. If I was at that lowest level, one, I would start by acknowledging what the challenges to the accomplishment of the task I've been given will actually be. And then, I'm a believer too on understanding what are the available tools to achieve the task and overcome those challenges. And I think this is where, as a profession, we often discount the true challenges depending on what the task is given to the military or the lowest tactical level in that urban environment, because of its unique challenges that it presents. Why is it so hard? The tools are different. The methods are different. Even our cultural heuristics of what is needed challenge us to be able to achieve the task in the most efficient way. If you want specifics, we can get there. Let's say if you're a company commander and you get eliminate the enemy in this urban area, then truly thinking through the challenges that the enemy, if you're defending urban terrain, are going to present to you, and then knowing that you have the tools. And a really good example that we use is in the Battle of Hue, where the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong seized a very big urban area, and the commander, a lieutenant colonel, a lower level battalion commander, is given the task to basically, it was a complex task, but eliminate the enemy. And he opened up a book of doctrine, a box of books at the time, and skimmed through two doctrine manuals and said, okay, I understand my task, and I understand historically I'm going to need a lot more explosive weapons that can penetrate concrete. I'm going to need a long list of things. And then he asked, so really at that lowest level, if I'm communicating in class to the lowest level leader at any level, is we want to make sure they have the right questions to ask of the task they've been given and the right resources in a very condensed amount of time to ask for when they truly understand what the task is going to be, as in what the requirements of the task. I mean,
based on your previous answer, you kind of gave us a know your task and know what needs to happen and how your role, you know, filters into that. But I like what you brought up about the historical context, and you referenced the Battle of Way, and the Battle of Way is going to be different than the Battle of Mosul and the Battle of Bakhmut, and these urban environments that we're seeing a lot of each have their unique properties. But you kind of hinted at there are certain questions that might be that could, you know, cross those different environments. They're all urban environments, but there's some commonalities between them. And I was curious if you had any kind of those broad stroke questions that might help, you know, individuals like myself or Major Valius here or any other planner out there listening.
I mean, I do, but again, these are multiple classes like Urban Operations 101, where you're right. Every city is different, but there are an understanding of the terrain, just like I teach in Urban 101, we know many of the common characteristics of cities, both from everything from the functional areas and how industrial areas become a very high intensity battle because of the nature of that functional area of the city, street patterns, historical trends of defending enemy. I mean, some of the questions that I would again have is, given on the task I'm being given, and even within the sub component, right, of the combat arms, what you know, if I have the job of mobility, fires, clear, you know, like all these different individual warfighting functions, and then the combat arms associated with that and the development of the plan in the urban area, it all changes. And I'm a strong advocate for that to include the mission. I mean, once you identify the right question to ask, as in what advantage does the enemy have in this environment? What is the task I've been given? Since it's most military tasks are environment agnostic, and I don't agree with that, but I can historically show you. And we're really fascinated with the city attack. That's an example, right? Even though for some reason in all of our operational concepts to include NATO's, everybody's attacking, right? Nobody's defending. It's a defensive alliance and very few people talk about defending anything. That aside, even within the attack, the penetrate, all of that, there are common characteristics of urban areas. There are very common enemy defensive tactics in urban areas, which will drive me, if I'm attacking or I'm defending, we have good mental models, whether it's understanding the environment, which it actually doesn't apply to urban areas, but what is going to be the enemy's biggest challenge is going to present me in the urban environment, right? And that'll allow you to break apart whether the complexities unique to the urban environment, whether it's the three-dimensional terrain, whether it is the presence of civilians, whether it is the information space, but which of the challenges, given my task, is going to be, there has to be a hierarchy, right? There's going to be a lot of challenges, but which one is going to prevent me from doing my job? Depending on what the type of mission it is, sometimes literally just moving around can be the biggest challenge. Whether you're talking about the Battle of Mogadishu, the 2004 Battle of Sadr City, where mobility becomes your greatest challenge. So do you have the right tools to handle that challenge? So the right questions to ask is the million-dollar word. And I know this is thinking through, I have the question, but I'm sure that this question that I'm asking is not the first time somebody's been presented or asked this question or being presented with that challenge. But this is understanding not just the environment, it is understanding how to accomplish the task that I've been given. And there is not one This is why I don't agree that the military task should be agnostic to the environment, like the fact that attack is the same for open terrain as it is urban, where even the, which really leads as a planner to the application of an agnostic attack, right? So I've been to the National Training Center, a lot of times, and watched a lot of brigades do the attack of Rajesh, and they apply a deliberate attack to it, although that I can show you historically, and we do in our course, that there's, I can name about 8 ways to try to attempt that mission, given the context of all the variables, all the mission variables in that actual operation. But because of the fact that we know the task, attack, but we're not asking really what, not only what are the biggest challenges, let's say a strong point defense, or what are the solutions to the task that I've been given, because there's more than one.
One of the things that I'm really curious about when it comes to urban conflict and warfare, and your point is made, you know, that we always think about attacking an urban environment, but defending is right there. And the complexity of defending in an urban environment is going to be, you know, something that we really need to wrap our heads around as well. I'm trying to think about a good way to ask about civilian populations and how to incorporate that into your planning. Because you have to balance between the two. You've got to achieve the military objective, whether it's defend or your defense or offense. At the same time, there's one of the defining points of an urban environment is the presence of a civilian population. And depending on where you are, that can be extremely dense. So it is a delicate balance. And it especially in the information environment, there's going to be a lot of pushback, and we can see that in the news on a daily basis anymore. So do you have any insights into the challenges of either attacking through or defending an urban environment with the dangers present to a civilian population?
Of course I do. I have many ideas on how to do it, how it's historically been done, what are the modern precautions to mitigate civilian harm. If you would recognize, not you, but depending if I was on the planning staff, that is your number one challenge. When you enter the urban environment, again, one of the reasons why it is understudied, underappreciated, underprepared for, is a belief that all the rules, all the restrictions on the use of force that I show you happen in every battle. And it's not just modern battles. I mean, MacArthur told the military and the army specifically that you couldn't use air power and fires because you wanted to preserve Manila as the Pearl of the Orient. And that had to be released. And I can show you in multiple battles where that's the case because of collateral damage, to include destruction, not just civilian casualties, but if I could convince you that that is your number one challenge, and although we are enemy focused in the urban environment where you start off with more constraints on the use of force, again, you have your task, you have your challenges. Now you want to talk about the tools from operational down to tactical that you're going to use to achieve your task. If you're not recognizing that that civilian population is your biggest challenge, it is the biggest. Entire battles, first battle of Fallujah, have been lost because that wasn't factored into the planning as the number one challenge. So what do you do about it, John Spencer, with all the challenges, but what are the solutions? Again, if you think that surrounding the city and sealing it in a deliberate attack, you know, again, discounting time-based, there are ways, plenty of ways. There's a whole handbook now on civilian harm mitigation that I highly recommend. And historically, things that you can do in order to move the civilians out of the main objective areas. The rules of engagement, the awareness to the force, that this is, there used to be a concept called the strategic corporal, right? Penned by a Marine general, General Kulak, who also penned the three-block war concept, and you know, these ideals that stick, right? Like OODA loop and all the Clausewitz things that people use and probably haven't read. But this thing about the strategic corporal, right, that the impacts of a decision on the tactical level can have strategic implications, it's way beyond that. Or like we're decades past that now, and it's about the where the perception of the use of force becomes more important than the use of force. And we say to our junior leaders, like, okay, let the higher level deal with that. I think that's step one of dealing with this fact, and I agree with you, is that no matter what you do, ultimately there will always be civilians in the environment. And if you're training from the tactical level to, you know, division level planning, and somehow you're saying, okay, I'm going to do this, and magically all the civilians are going to be gone. It's never happened. Never in the history of warfare. Although we have taken the time because we had it to do things like in the Second Battle of Fallujah or the 2017 Battle of Mawari, where you had the time, so you surround the city, you had the capabilities, you had places for the civilians to go, so you emptied the city of about 90%. Yeah, but with urbanization, a city of 2 million with 10% of that is still a whole lot of civilians in the operating environment and in the main combat area. So first step is how to deal with it is recognize it, that it's a fact. And if you're training anything urban and there isn't any civilians, then you're not preparing people for the environment, even if you're doing it as a planning scenario or an actual live or even virtual and constructive, that you just wish away what I say will be your number one challenge, because you want to train these other things like the application of the use of force without even putting on the restrictions on the use of force that will be there. But people imagine this, you know, war something, because it isn't World War II where there were restrictions on the use of force in urban areas, but they imagine some scenario where, you know, unlimited use of force, which is not, I'm not trying to be facetious, but the first step is to acknowledge that's there. The second step is to look at history. I'm not a historian, and I know there are many at Fort Leavenworth that do amazing work, but inherent in a critical thinker is realizing that you're not the first person to face this challenge, and what has been done in the past, even if it's not in doctrine, to mitigate that challenge, whether it's to take it away from the enemy or to deal with it because it's so prominent, like the information space. You know there'll be civilians there. So if the information tools, whether that's your different functions within that influence and all the new terms of it, is a highest priority even over the actual application of close with and destroy the enemy, is how you're dealing, how you're prepared to fight in that information operation environment. So the strategic corporal doesn't become the strategic private, and then all of a sudden you've lost a battle and verging on losing a war.
That's a great summary, sir. And if we were to look at your passport, we'd all see probably dozens of stamps from all across the world, from your travels to actually visit some of these historic urban battles. I know you've personally actually visited Israel. You visited Ukraine, including in times of conflict. What trends have you observed in some of the tactics and strategies that both militaries and even non-state actors are using that are impacting the course of these conflicts? Anything you can recommend for the operational planners to specifically link both of them?
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, because I do believe firmly that in order to get a real understanding of the character of even a modern or recently concluded battle, you have to walk the ground. It's just something personally, and I've learned. I just got back from Israel in December of 2023. And even with my over a decade to include studying everything from mega cities to smart cities to all the major urban battles that I've had time to, I learned from being in Israel and watching the challenges of a modern urban or a modern war with multiple urban battles in it. And I learn every day, right? That's a big process of our self-development, is being a lifelong learner. The trends that nobody, again, I have a lot of job security because of how many people in the U.S. military are allowed to only study this environment, and I know why. I mean, because you have to be prepared for all environments. But the biggest thing I've learned from traveling to just in the last few years, Nagorno-Karabakh, Ukraine multiple times, Israel multiple times, is that your decisive battle will be the urban fight. Fine, keep your enemy-centric, your terrain-centric methodologies. Recognize that the urban fight will be the decisive battle that achieves the strategic goals for both sides. That was the case in the 2020 war in Nagorno-Karabakh, the fall of the Shusha city. That was the case in the beginning of the Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine. It attempted to take the capital of Kyiv, made lots of mistakes, to include an operational level planning of branch and sequels, and it lost the Battle of Kyiv. It lost the war for all of Ukraine, and it shifted its strategic objectives, which also happens in war. In the Israel war, the battles are still ongoing, but we're solely focused on the urban terrain because that's where the enemy was. An enemy strategy, you fight the enemy strategy, and all that. So I've written an article, but if you're attacking or you're defending, what are the trends that keep reoccurring? The use of strong point defense, the use of the information environment, the inability to penetrate concrete. There are a lot of tactical, but also operational levels. I mean, one of the few things that's been written about the operational level urban combat was by now deceased General Robert Scales, who said, get there first. So you have to have the operational speed and tempo to take away that strategy for the enemy is get to the urban environment first. Not always going to say that that's going to be an option, but I'll give it credence. I don't believe in what used to be written in print in our doctrine, avoid and bypass at all cost, given the trend. And I'm glad that we as a profession took that out of our urban doctrine and recognize it will be the battle. And what will you need, because we never fight alone, is the other tool. Well, the other thing that I've learned is having a better understanding, despite all the technologies, we have this affinity with technology will solve our problems from the operational down to the tactical. It'll give us better situational awareness. It'll give us a better kill chain. It'll give us a better penetration capability. Yes, and there are still reoccurring challenges in the urban environment that nobody has a solution for. So you need to be prepared to at least think through the problem set and identify which ones, whether it's the subterranean, like we're seeing in Gaza for the first time that I can find, where the subterranean challenge is your primary challenge. So you better have all the resources and capabilities to deal with that challenge, which becomes it's a tactical challenge, of course. But what does it mean at the operational and strategic level if that's the enemy's main strategy? Is not the use of the urban environment, but the use of the subterranean environment. So it's hard to pick out one, and that's why I have job security and why I continue to travel the world, is because one of the reasons I went to Nagorno-Karabakh in 2020 is because everybody was saying that the drones were the dominant feature of that war and that was their future. And there are many other things, but I wanted to get on the ground, and that's not what I saw on the ground. Not that I'm cursed by confirmation bias, but we as a profession cannot continue to not prioritize the urban environment.
And that's kind of a good segue into my next question, sir, regarding logistics. So we just discussed that the urban battle is going to be the decisive battle. It is what's going to link the strategic ends, or get to the strategic ends. So how do you actually resource an urban battle, especially if you look at a historical example like Operation Gothic Serpent, which most people know as Mogadishu, where they were in an urban battle for over 24 hours. How do you resupply if technology is not the answer? How do you resupply an urban unit, a soldier or group that's in that urban battle for an extended period of time?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question, and I'm sorry I'm all over the place, but it's kind of when you're a one-trick pony, you can go down into the weeds. But I believe in that everybody needs mental models. So that includes planning, right? Whether it's a strat manual or, the 3-1, three attackers to one defender, what happens in the urban environment. That's a combat power analysis and not a straight figure number. In logistics, again, to include in Gothic Serpent, which is, I didn't find out. Again, I'd known about it until I did a deeper dive, that one of the biggest challenges was the fact that the environment had changed overnight. The entire urban environment, because of the Somali Civil War, 50,000 people had surged into the city and put up lean-tos and completely changed the physical, of those three elements of the urban terrain, had completely changed the physical dimensions of the city. The maps didn't apply anymore. The streets dead-ended. So for logistics, what does that matter? So if you don't have lines of communication and you don't keep those lines of communications open and assign combat power to it, one of my mentors, who was my brigade commander and multiple times has he mentored me over my career, is now General Rainey, the Futures Command commander, who was also the battalion commander for Task Force 27 penetration in the Second Battle of Fallujah, who has the job of foreseeing the future. And one of the missions that he's told me on my podcast was that, you know, securing a line of communication through urban terrain is a very likely mission for the Army, period. So you can take that to the Army level all the way down to the tactical level. Like, how many forces do I need to secure a line of communication? Because that's going to, I can give you some mental models, although some of my friends disagree with it, that, hey, you're going to need four times the amount of ammunition. You're going to need four times the amount of water, food, casualty levels of care, four times everything, right? There's just some people, like the Canadian doctrine actually says that. Ours just says you'll need more. But I'm telling you, you're going to need lines of communication. And a lot of times, again, because we want to hand wave it, we're like, well, we just assign that a battalion. That battalion can secure that line of communication. But like, what task is that? Oh, secure. But it's secure a line of communication through an urban area. And then you have the mobility and counter mobility. Now you see where, if logistics, I agree with you, will be a massive concern of yours. It's not just getting the logistics, knowing what logistics you need, which is, you know, part of that logistics planning, sustainment planning. But okay, how are you going to get it there? I have seen futuristic models where you could have flown something into, you know, people like to use past scenarios and make it into the future. You could use drones to do, you know, emergency speedball, direct delivery of ammunition, blood, stuff like that. Yeah, that's all feasible. But really at that higher operational level planning is, how are you going to secure those lines of communication and keep them secure? Because that historically, again, can mean victory or winning or not.
And yes, sir, before we get into our closing questions, so what does the Army currently have today that they can use to train and prepare for this kind of approach and or the unique challenges in the urban warfare? And second part to that question is, if you had a wish list that is actually feasible, what should the U.S. Army add to make it better?
Oh, so that's a podcast. That's not a question. That's a podcast, multiple podcasts. I have been involved with multiple Army level initiatives to answer that question. My first study for the Army was a part of the General Odenaro's, the Chief of Staff of the Army Strategic Studies Group, looking at, could the Army conduct an operation in a mega city, you know, a city of over 10 million. That has a long history. But then I was involved in General Milley directed TRADOC dense urban training strategies. For some reason, everybody goes to, we need to build a mega city. We need to build a really big city in order to train these combat forces. So yes, we do need to improve, and there have been some improvements, but the money also went away for most of it, to like the physical combat training centers. But, you know, if I was king for a day, my list would be a little bit different than just, you know, a couple billion dollars to build up bigger physical urban training sites. When one of our challenges is expertise, it literally is. So every time these initiatives come around, whether it's updating the doctrine, what should be done to our physical training sites, what can be done to our virtual capabilities, whether it's mission command training program, war fighters, whatever, what can be done more? Your biggest challenge is expertise. To know what you have, like to answer that question, it takes decades of learning. It takes combat observers in the urban battles of today so that you can come back and say, okay, look, yeah, if we had a lot of money, we could build, try to replicate. But like we talked about at the beginning of this is every city is different. So what are we replicating? The challenge is expertise, both in the force, but also to inform massive changes, if that makes sense. So I have a list, but the number one list at the top of my list is expertise in the force. So that when you get asked or when you're given the mission, you have a better understanding of what the challenges are, what have been the past solutions, whether there's current technologies or current methodologies or current capabilities to ask for. That's what I see more so than, hey, we need a bigger urban training area. Although we do, and they're under-resourced. And most of the time when even the chief of staff of the Army said, build it, they said, okay, well, how much longer you got? About 2 years. Okay, we'll build it then. And then it doesn't happen, but that's an aside. We need experts in this very unique, trending, most likely, most dangerous, most complex task to a military to ever be given.
That was a fantastic answer. I actually got after the last question that I was wanting to ask you about, you know, what aspects of operational art do you think we should really highlight for our audience today? And it sounds like expertise really is kind of that thing that, you know, it's incumbent upon us as planners, as officers, or as just students of warfare to be the experts whenever that task comes down. So we'll just move ahead to our scripted last question where we like to ask our guests, you know, what's a podcast or a book? Now, obviously, Urban Warfare Project is probably going to be your answer. And I do, honestly, anybody listening, any of the Modern Warfare Institute podcasts are wonderful. So I'll ask you this, sir. What book or books are you reading right now and would recommend to someone in our position and why?
So I can't say my own books, is what you're saying.
Okay. Well, if you want to put your own book on, that's fine.
Yeah, Understanding Urban Warfare. But I also am – there's a book that Fort Leavenworth produced, the Combat Studies Institute, called Block by Block. I'm not reading it now because I've read it many times before. I'm actually writing my own version with modern examples. So the Modern War Institute also does case studies. We will have one coming out in a couple weeks on the Battle of Morari because it's important to know our past but also know our present there. The book that I'm actually currently reading that I do highly recommend – is called Conflicts. It's General Petraeus's, now General Retired Petraeus's, newest book that quickly walks you through so many different modern wars and then the so what, like the Yom Kippur War, which really changed the U.S. military on so many levels, but understanding the Starry Report, understanding General Starry's efforts, how many combat observers and studies were done after the Yom Kippur War. I think we currently need something like that in relation to urban to fundamentally change some of our approaches and capability development, but that's not my field. I recommend that book. I recommend my book. I recommend the Urban Warfare Project podcast, like you said, but we are a military of amazing leaders, and that's because our leader development is unparalleled, and a big part of that is self-development, so get to reading.
And sir, again, thank you for your time. We talked about a number of things today, from historical examples dating back to way, contemporary examples for you walking the grounds in Ukraine, Israel. We talked about expertise and understanding that individuals who are going to be going into the urban environment need to understand urban operations, its doctrine, its history, the theory applied to it, some of the mental models, and specifically how you're going to approach that urban environment and urban operation. But again, I wanted to just really thank you for your time today, sir, and it was great talking to you.
Thanks for having me, man.
The views and expressions heard here are those of the authors and do not reflect the official position or opinions of SAMS, the U.S. Army, or the U.S. government. Stay up to date on all things SAMS by checking us out on Twitter at US_SAMS, Instagram at US.SAMS, and on LinkedIn. Additionally, if you have recommendations for an episode or wish to engage with us, please email us at operationalarch@gmail.com.